You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
Hello and welcome to Absent Minded, Player of the Month edition. And as you all know, Eyes on the Prize is looking for a new home. We're gonna find one. We're sure of that. The podcast will live on, hopefully, because Matt is huge in Hong Kong. But we hope to get him back on the channel. He's joining us today. Matt, what can you tell us about your success in Hong Kong?
Well, I'm number one in Hong Kong. All my homies in Hong Kong, shout out to y'all. Thanks for listening to me. We remain number one in Hong Kong. We will remain number one in Hong Kong for as long as everybody's willing to listen to me over there. So, it's going swimmingly.
I mean, like, we're starting to pull into China. There are certain companies that would love to have that access, you know, and I'm really happy that you are bringing that heat into the podcast and those, you know, more or less 1.2 billion people in China. You know, that'd be some advertising money that we can live off for a good time as the site needs more coverage as well. I'm also joined by super prospect guy, Hadi Kalakesh of, Game Over Prospect, NHL Prospects, right?
Locked On NHL Prospects, Dauber yep. Prospects, obviously Habs Eyes on the Prize, glad to be here. And I'm working on some videos for my personal YouTube channel. I'll be sort of breaking down some 2023 NHL Draft prospects, so that'll be coming out soon.
You know, I hope you all heard about what Robert Olsson said about Axel Sandin Pelikka. Mm-hmm. You know, let's draft him.
And yeah, hopefully.
Zach Benson.
Oh, please. Love this.
There are a few names. Actually, one of my favorites for the later rounds, Felix Nilsson, mm-hmm. Just signed a rookie contract with Rögle after having played 100 minutes in the SHL before his draft. Yep. That's pretty incredible. Slow Riser, I know you like him as well, Hadi. But we're mm-hmm. here. We're not here to talk the draft already. That's a couple of months away. And we're going to start about talking about the player of the month for February, or organizational players of the month for February. And Hadi and Matt is here, so I'm just going to keep quiet for the next, you know, 25 minutes, because they're going to talk about Riley Kidney to start off, because that is the North American prospect of the month.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He's been tremendous this past month. I mean, since his trade to Gatineau at the start of January, he's just been outstanding. He's up to 46 points in 18 games, just ridiculous numbers right now with the Olympique. He's playing with sort of rotation of wingers. Olivier Nadeau, Alexis Gendron are a couple of them. He spent a bit of time with some other wingers, but those are the main two that I think, you know, he's gelled the most with. The playmaking is tremendous, but one thing that's really, really improved in his game since the offseason is his ability to cut to the middle. That's something that was a big, big weakness in his game, and it limited a lot of his potential. I saw him as sort of a best-case third liner because of that main issue. But with work with Adam Nicholas, he's mentioned this himself, Adam Nicholas sort of brought that to his attention, that it's really important to cut to the middle and to find ways to get to the inside with the puck instead of just throwing pucks at the front of the net from the periphery. And since then, he's come into his own. He's been able to make plays a lot more regularly. And for me, he's gone from a best case third liner to that being his likely outcome as a prospect. And you're just going to build off of that and see how far up the lineup he can play. I think he tops out as a middle six forward. I don't think there's much progress left in his game, you know, in terms of his technical tools. It's mostly about upping his stamina, making him more sort of pro-ready physically. But I think if you get a second liner, even a fringe second liner out of Riley Kidney, you're very happy with that.
Matt, a second liner, for sure. A third line center. Can you really stand for that?
Absolutely. I don't think there's, like, especially when you're talking about second round picks, right? You're not, like, your odds of getting an NHLer at all are not fantastic, right? They're mm-hmm. definitely better than they are in the later rounds, but they're not fantastic. The odds of getting a star are almost astronomical, and the odds of getting somebody who's like a really good productive middle six player With the versatility that he has, he can play center, he can play wing as well. You don't always get that in the second round. And, you know, Hattie put it a little bit more eloquently than I would, but I go back to what he was doing in Bathurst at the start of the year, right? He was driving the bus for Bathurst and he was doing pretty damn well. But I said this on Game Over last night, he was driving a busted bus with a bunch of flat tires in Bathurst. Then he gets traded over to Gatineau, and now he's got wingers, right? Now he's got people that he can play off. He scored a goal the other game where Zach Dean took it in. Zach Dean, a first round draft pick, actually. He cuts in on the left-hand side and then just drops it off for Kidney. Kidney has a look and he just absolutely hammers one on net and puts it right in. He's mostly a playmaker, I find. I think that's where his real skill lies. And that's why he needs to have some people around him who can actually play. I think he's going to be super fun to watch next year with the Laval Rocket, because they're, you know, making the Habs next year is going to be a bit of a big jump for him. But yep. I think if he goes to the AHL, they're going to be able to give him those, you know, those top 6 minutes. They're going to be able to give him power play 1 minute. He's fantastic on the power play, by the way. Had a beautiful assist to Tristan Luneau the other day where he kind of cut up near the point and then just did a little drop pass. And Luneau had all the time in the world to shoot because Kidney made everybody think that he was going to cut into the middle, like Hattie talked about. He's been attacking the middle, and now there's variety to the way that he's able to generate these chances for himself and for his teammates. And it's showing in the point production. So he's a guy that I've got very high on my prospect list now. Well, I had him pretty high last year. Actually, I think I ranked him number 10 in our top 25 under 25. I might be bumping him up this year based on what he's done. It's been really impressive. It's been kind of a breath of fresh air to see the variety in his attacks now. And I think, again, he's going to be somebody who's absolutely to watch next year in Laval. It's going to be an exciting time in Laval. They're going to have a number of prospects coming up. And I think he's going to be one that's really going to push to be maybe that next guy who gets called up if and when the Habs need to call up somebody from the farm.
Indeed. And I like the fact what Hattie says. He's taken one of those weaknesses that he had, turned it into a strength. He's working with the Habs development coach already, getting better, getting stronger, getting an understanding of what he needs to work with, and also showing that he listens and adjusts in those situations and areas is an incredible thing to have for a young player.
Yeah, 100%. I think adaptability is one of the most underrated assets in a player's sort of profile. And it's something that's mainly mental, and you don't really get a grasp of it until you watch, you know, 10, 15, 20 games of them. Or if you talk to them, you know, you have to have a close relationship with the staff in order to sort of know if a player is adaptable or not. But in Kidney's case, it's very evident. The change in his inside play this year and the fact that it coincides with Adam Nicholas joining the team. I mean, Nicholas has a long-standing history of improving players' inside play. He prones that a lot with his prospects. It goes back to his days with the Chicago Steel, with the likes of Sean Farrell, Matt Coronado. All those guys have this tendency to cut to the inside that they develop once they joined the Chicago Steel. So Nicholas has this as a sort of staple of what he expects from his prospects and what he develops in them. And it's just very obvious when you watch Riley Kidney play now compared to last year that this is something that Nicholas worked on him closely.
Looking at the European prospect of the month, and I'm sorry to say this, Matt, because you wanted Jordan Dumais, a small skilled player from Quebec. But the big size defender from Stockholm, Sweden, Adam Engström, Hattie, again, someone that has taken giant leaps. You had him very high in the top 25, under 25 this summer. The rest of us didn't. I rated him because he went to the Rögle, because he was more or less unknown. He was labeled one of the most underrated prospects in the Montreal prospect pool. And I know Chris Abbott, the GM of Rögle, said if he is underrated or ranked this low in the Montreal prospect pool, you have a bunch of really good prospects. And now we can see what he meant, because if he was impressive in the World Juniors, if he's been impressive over the season, February brought him into the real spotlight, really.
Yeah, if you include January 31st, he's got 9 points in the last 10 games. in the past month, which is outstanding. Because, you know, he's playing in the SHL, which is a league that's already tough to score in as a forward. He's a defenseman, and, you know, he's not getting the main minutes on the team in terms of, you know, power play, you know, even strength, that kind of thing. He's averaging about 15, 16 minutes a game. From the blue line, he's still able to produce as he is, but more importantly, he's improved defensively a lot, I feel. It's still a work in progress. There's still some issues with his gap control and his rush defense, his ability to man his own zone as well, clear the net front. These are things that need to improve and usually do improve with time. That's usually why defensemen tend to bloom a bit later than forwards, but he's on an upwards curve regarding that. I feel like he's a lot more proactive when defending. He's identifying threats earlier, getting in position earlier, understanding where he fits within the scheme, within the formation, within the structure. These are things he's learning, you know, in Rögle that, you know, Moritz Seider before him learned in Rögle as well. These are things that weren't necessarily staples of his game, you know, in Germany or in the AHL in his rookie season with the Grand Rapids Griffins. But when he joined Rögle, he became a lot more conscious of the structure, became a lot more understanding of defensive positioning, and became a lot more proactive in stifling threats early. So these are all things that improved, you know, these are things that improve gradually when you're in a right entourage. And I feel like Enstrom is in exactly that situation.
He's fourth in scoring for juniors, yep, in SHL. Yep. He's beaten by Leo Carlsson at 22 points, Marco Kasper at 22 points, Filip Bystedt in Linköping at 18. That they're all forwards. They're all highly drafted prospects or being drafted very highly this year with Leo Carlsson's case. But Adam Engström has 16 in 39 games. That's incredible, especially with limited minutes, a limited usage on the second power play unit, something he has earned the hard way this season, because mm-hmm. he didn't have any time at all from the beginning, and now he's being used as one of the quarterbacks, really, on the second power play unit. I describe it in the article a little bit as he is a lost puppy sometimes in the defensive zone. They are still prone to errors. The mm-hmm. really good thing, and something we really should encourage, is that he's allowed to make these mistakes and still get to play. He's not nailed into the boards or into the seats after having made one mistake by Cam Abbott.
Exactly. I've said it a bunch of times, but experimentation and usage are the two main ways that a player improves and adds new things to his game. And it's definitely the case in Engstrom's you know, situation, because he is getting, like you said, the opportunities to make mistakes. And by making these mistakes, he understands not only how they happen, but how to prevent them. And if you're in an organization that doesn't allow you the opportunity to make mistakes so you can learn from them, well, you don't really improve your game in any sort of tangible way, because you're not facing situations that you're not used to. You're not facing situations you're uncomfortable with, and you're not able to turn your weaknesses into strengths the way, for example, Riley Kidney did. But with the right development staff, with the right sort of entourage and the right encouragements, you can turn these weaknesses into strengths by just consistently facing these situations and then going to the video room and being like, okay, what did I do wrong here? What should I have done? And this comes with experience as well.
And we know that, and I spoke to Adam just a couple of weeks ago, and he said, I love it here in Ängelholm with Rögle. And you think he will say something nice about the city. And he goes, they got three ice sheets here. I can practice all day long. And yeah. Cam Abbott has told me repeatedly that he's a rink rat. You need to actually tell him to go home at night. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he'd be there all day long. Looking forward, though, we're looking at the main club here. NHL Player of the Month, a little bit surprisingly, something maybe that we didn't expect, Matt, is Mike Madison.
The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki Season 2 is
marvelous.
Great. And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki Season 2, now streaming only on Disney+.
Yeah, Mike Matheson, man, I wrote an article not too long ago where I said maybe this guy's playing himself into the deadline conversation. And a lot of people got upset and they're like, what are you talking about? Why would you want to trade him? That's not what I was trying to say with the article. I was trying to say he's playing so well that it would not surprise me if other teams were making offers on him, because he looks like the best defenseman on the Canadiens roster right now. Skates like the wind. That goal that he scored against Ottawa, where he just, you know, goes into the zone and takes a shot on goal and then goes around Thomas Chabot like it's nothing and then collects his own rebound and puts it in. His skating is incredible. I don't think that you get very many defensemen that can skate like that. And I really think at this point, for me personally, as much as I wrote that article and I thought, you know, they might be getting some interesting offers for him, I would hang on to him. I think you need to hang on to at least one veteran defenseman that has some experience to kind of mentor some of the young players that you have coming up. The Adam Engstroms, the William Trudeau's, the Arbor Jack guys, the everybody else that they've got right now, the Caden Gooley's, the Jordan Harris's. They've got so many young defensemen. They need to have somebody who's got a little bit of experience to mentor them. And I think he's the guy. You know, his skating's fantastic. I don't know what else you could say about him. He's really become one of my favorite players on the team right now to watch. And I think he's a guy that could potentially stick around for them and really be kind of their leader on the blue line through the end of the rebuild.
Yeah, I'll say this: between David Savard and Mike Matheson, the one I'd rather have mentor Caden Gooley is Matheson for sure. that style I think would benefit. I understand that Gooley is really strong defensively, but it's exactly because of that I want him to learn from Matheson the ins and outs of how and when to get involved in offense, how and when to jump into play, because he does it, he loves to do it, and he's already pretty good at it. But there's room for improvement, and I think that Mike Matheson already has that sort of down pat. I think that's one of his best assets is his understanding of when and how to join offense. And I think if Gooley learns that sort of comprehension of offensive flow from Matheson, I think it's a really, really great thing for him.
Roger Rundberg.
Yeah, he had a back check against I think it was Philly, right? They had a busted play at the offensive blue line where Matheson ended up coming back on a back check and like he was flying.
Yep.
I forget who he caught, but he was absolutely flying. Like, there is defensive responsibility to him too, and I can't agree more, right? If you really want somebody to mentor Gooley in terms of when to activate and jump into the rush or go for a skate, I think that's the guy.
Yeah.
As I was going to say, Roger Rundberg said he needs to teach players to play poker, when to fold, when to go all in, and Matheson has that in spades, really, doesn't he?
100%. He's so active, but he doesn't do it blindly. He doesn't do it mindlessly. There is a purpose to when he does it, how he does it, which route he takes. You know, he plays his hand really well. When he's scanning the ice, he can sort of identify the right scenario and what to do in it. And I think that's something that all Habs defensemen, especially the Gooleys, the Harrises, the William Trudeaus can learn from. It's something that can absolutely benefit them. So I'm definitely all for the idea of keeping Mike Matheson as a veteran to sort of mentor these guys as they come up.
Yeah, and he catches guys flat-footed too, like he did the Chabot, where he takes the shot and then Chabot's like getting ready to pivot and he recognizes that he's flat-footed, one quick crossover and he's around him like nothing. Like the ability to see that and also, like you mentioned, picking his spots right and doing it with a purpose, it's a huge benefit for the Habs coming from the blue line that you got a player like that. So exciting times, even though the Habs kind of suck.
The honorable mention goes to Nick Suzuki, but really, should it be Rafael Harvey-Pinard that has kickstarted Nick Suzuki that should have had the award?
Mm-hmm. It could be either one of them. I would have voted for RHP just because I'm excited seeing a guy like a seventh round pick like that come up and be productive in the NHL. But I think Suzuki does deserve the honorable mention because, you know, he's kind of had a shitty situation this year. You know, he starts out, he gets named captain. So an unbelievable high to start the year. You're named captain of the most historic franchise in the NHL, and you're playing on a line with Cole Caulfield. Everything is coming up Nick Suzuki. It's going fantastic. But then you start to run into problems, right? They can't figure out who's going to play on the other wing. Kirby Dach's the only guy that works there, but they really need Kirby Dach to be playing center. So they're struggling to figure out who can play on the other side of that wing. But still, things are going pretty well. And then all of a sudden, Cole Caulfield, shoulder injury, out for the season. And now Nick Suzuki's just got to deal with a rotating cast of players. He can't have Kirby Dach on his wing, who's the one other player that had been working with him, because they absolutely needed Kirby Dach at center. And now Kirby Dach's hurt anyways. So like everything has gone wrong for Nick Suzuki, and he's still managed to continue producing, not at the same rate that he was early on in the season, but he's still producing. So I think that's a bit of a silver lining for him and for Habs fans, is that, you know, you look at his production. Is it, you know, that point per game that he kind of started out with the pace at the beginning of the year? No, but he's still doing pretty darn well. So it's good news.
Yeah, I'll say this about Rafael Arvidsson. The philosophy behind picking him in the seventh round is so... I think that it's something that's underlooked. You know, going for the overagers, you know, late in late rounds, I feel like it's so important for so many teams to draft a 17, 18-year-old that they forget that, you know, if they don't end up going further than the 20-year-old already is, then what's the point? You know, you might as well pick the guy who's already gone through that development, who's already improved. You know, a guy like Rafael Arvidsson, you know, if they pick a 17, 18-year-old that becomes, you know, half of what Arvidsson is at 20 years old, I mean, I don't think that's worth the investment. But Rafael Arvidsson in the seventh round, you jump on that. Obviously, he was overlooked in two drafts. There's questions around that, but it was mainly the issue of size, right? Like, he wasn't the biggest guy, but he plays huge. It's a really, really smart sort of philosophy behind sort of selecting that kind of guy. I'm really for it. I hope to see more overagers get picked in the NHL draft.
That was that's how they got Simoneau too, right?
Yep.
Simoneau was passed over, I think once, or was it twice?
Twice, yeah.
It's smart to, especially when you get those undersized guys. Yeah, they're producing in junior, because, like you said, you know, you could pick in the seventh round or sixth round, you could pick a 17-year-old, 18-year-old that maybe is doing pretty well, but maybe they're never going to get to the point where that 20-year-old is, or that 19-year-old is, right? There's a few more guys like that that are coming up this year. Like, for example, the goaltender Thomas Milic for Seattle. I've had my eye on him for a while, and I hope the Habs go after him. Like that, like you said, that philosophy is smart. I think you can get some more, not necessarily developed, but more polished players, and you kind of know what they can do. You have a better idea of where they would hypothetically fit in a pro system. So hopefully that continues.
You have the trend line, really. You see it with Petteri Nurmi, that has a positive trend line. Might not get go all the way, but it's worth doing. We've seen it with Lucas Vaidemo. Mattias Norlander was struggling with injuries, has come around a little bit in the AHL now. But you have sort of a trajectory that you can see and follow through and understand where players are going if you give them that other year. And maybe that's the positive out of you know, hockey for out of COVID for hockey. When you start to see that, you know, you can pick player later and because you have more data and you can watch them maybe a few more games over video and stuff like that. I like this. And especially if you pick them in fifth, sixth, seventh round, where it's a little bit of a crapshoot anyway.
Yeah, 100%. The way I see it is you make it less of a crapshoot by, you know, picking an older player who you can already see the development path and the trajectory they've been on for the last 2 years. It's less of a crapshoot because there's less unpredictability. Mm-hmm. You know, there's less chances of them not developing into what they already are. You know, if you pick a 17 or 18-year-old, it reduces the luck factor.
Indeed, it does. Looking, though, and we're going to keep it short today, in AHL, Caden Primo started out very strong. Caved in really, or cratered towards the end of the season, end of the month, a little bit like Laval in general, though. What can we say? He's been,
I don't know,
so with the organization for so long, it feels. But
he had that really good playoff, right? Yeah. That really good playoff gave me some hope that maybe he was going to become that, you know, number one goaltender of the future. I'm not so sure right now. That's why I mentioned, you know, when we were talking about older prospects, like going after a guy like Thomas Milic in the draft, I think the Habs need to hedge their bets. I don't think that they can necessarily be counting on Caden Primo to become a number one goaltender in the NHL. Now, we know, and you know better than anybody, Pat, they've got other options, right? They've got Jakub Dobiš. They've got Frederik Dichau. There's some other guys coming up, but I think they need to hedge their bets and they need to start making some picks, because I'm not personally super confident in Caden Primo as, you know, a future number one goaltender in the NHL. I think he's a little too inconsistent. I think he might have the career trajectory of, say, a Samuel Montembeau, where maybe he might get to the NHL. He might be a career backup. He might, you know, sometimes get thrust into that starter role and be a little bit inconsistent. I'm not too sure what to make of him, honestly.
Yeah, I think he was highly touted coming out of Northeastern because of how good defensively that team was. It kind of masked a lot of the technical issues in this game. I feel like the lack of consistency with Primo comes from just a lack of athleticism. There's games where he gets straight up tired, and you know, it affects a goalie's game. A goalie needs to be able to handle 60 minutes on skates on the ice, and you know, when you have a strong defensive team in front of you, in the NCAA, where plays are a bit more predictable, where there's a bit less chaos, it's a bit more structured than the AHL or the NHL, it's easy to have those sort of issues be masked. You know, when you're playing behind guys like Jordan Harris, like Jaden Struble, another defenseman that they had in that roster that are really sound defensively. And, you know, especially in Harris's case, Harris was, you know, he was already the player he is today, like 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I mean, this was a player who reached maturity in terms of his game really early. So he had that support and now he doesn't. And it's just a completely different game, especially with the amount of chaos that's been added by playing in the AHL.
That's an interesting point. Like, I hadn't thought of it that way in terms of him getting tired. But now that I think about it, like, there's definitely games where you see him towards the end of the game, like, kind of not cheating necessarily, but, you know, it's just not in the same, you know, sound positioning that he would need to be in the net.
Yeah, right? He's not the same player at the start and at the end of the game is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's one of the keys, right? Maybe he needs to just bear down and really focus on conditioning and being able to stand in that net for 60 minutes, and then maybe it'll make a difference, right? I think the Habs are going to work with him. I don't think they're giving up on him and they're going to send him off or anything like that, but like I said, I would hedge my bets and I would try to work with him to see if you can correct some of those issues and maybe get him to a point where he's comfortable in the net for 60 minutes on a regular basis.
Agreed. One way they've hedged their bets already, they got, as you mentioned, Dobiš, Dichau, and Verbitic or how it's pronounced. but they seem to have been going with a goalie at any given point, at any given draft. At one point or another, in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, they pick a goalie, usually a big one, and see. It's a little bit throwing darts on the wall and see if someone sticks.
Yeah, but this is a type of philosophy that leads to a Devon Levi sliding down the rankings. You know, players like that, goalies like that, who are extremely solid and are small, but they're solid because they're small. You know, players who've adapted around their size, goaltenders who've adapted around their size to, you know, be more athletic, more quick on their skates, more fluid, more agile than your average 6'5" goaltender. But because they're 6'1", they don't get drafted. It's just, it's not a philosophy that I think really works necessarily for goaltenders. You need to put a lot of trust in your goalie development staff. And so far, it hasn't really worked out so well. There hasn't been a single goalie that they drafted since Carey Price really that's developed into something potent. So I don't know how long they're going to keep doing this. I really hope they start identifying the actual skills behind the player rather than just going for a goalie size, because you can't develop any goalie into a starter just because they're big. I don't think that's how it works.
You've been listening to Absent Minded, Player of the Month, February. You've been listening to Matt Drake of Bottom 6 Minutes, Analyze on the Price, and obviously the top podcast in Hong Kong, as we said. Joining us, Matt.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
And of course, we're here with Locked On NHL Prospects, Hadi Kalakesh, Hadi Scouting on Twitter, and Hadi Scouting on YouTube, where we're looking forward to some more videos that you're doing, Hadi.
Absolutely. I'm in the final stages of my Ethan Gauthier video, which I'll be putting out very soon. You can expect that in the next couple of days. Yeah, I've got a lot of good things to say about him, but since his dad follows me on Twitter, I'll be a bit more careful with what I say. So, yeah.
There you have it. And it's been me, Patrick Bexell, hosting this session. Stay tuned, stay available, and be sure to follow the new Eyes on the Prize wherever we may go.